there is my favorite part of the whole thing. I don't care if I'm doing it.
Can anybody else hear this? I don't even know what's going on right now.
Can you hear it?
Yeah, I can hear it.
Okay, I was like, don't freak me out like that, man. But no, so this is the sloppiest intro ever for What Else Is On, the show on the Else Nerds Network, where we talk about the TV and movie shows of the past. Yeah. If it's not in there, I'm adding it into the script later. TV and movies over the past week, I'm Gregor Sprague, and joining me on this first possible audio edition is Corey Scott. Corey, how you doing?
I'm fine. I hope people can handle listening to this because I have a hard time watching it.
Not surprisingly, but I'm that same way. Like, I don't, because I don't like how I look or how I sound all that often. Even though I do compare my laugh to Anthony Carboni's, or one of my variations of my laugh, I should say. And so it's like, and I like listening to him. I like listening to We Have Concerns and stuff like that. So it's that weird, popping up.
I've gotten used to listening to my own voice from listening to not only the D20 podcast that I did before we started Else Nerds, but also I used to record our gaming sessions a lot. So I have just tons of hours of us all sitting around a gaming table being doofuses. And it's fine. I mean, it's through one little microphone on my phone or through my old MP3 player. So I can handle it, although I am acutely aware of every single flaw that I make or misstep in words or just me in generally being an asshole. But it was really exciting this week when I was driving to work listening to one of my favorite podcasts, which is the Sci-Fi Geeks Club, and all of a sudden I hear my name and my voice pop up because I'm on it. I'm like, oh yeah, that's right, that's fun. So you get over those things when you're able to do shows with fun people, and I enjoy doing the show with you. So
yeah.
I don't have that big a problem with it.
No, yeah, and you will have to excuse the volumes while I am trying to get things set right. Which is probably something you shouldn't do while you're doing live, but whatever. Forget it.
Hey, you don't have to do anything, guys. It's your option. You listen, you skip, you just go and you crush us into the dirt. It's okay. We understand, man. It's all a learning process anyways. But hey,
yes.
If you're sticking around, welcome to the show.
Yes, thank you. And I did hand gesture when I'm realizing this is for audio, but whatever. If you're watching a video, hey, how you doing?
You're going to have to get over that one real fast, too.
Yeah, so the only real bit of news that I have is something that I saw on SourceFed, where I get a lot of my news, and that's Degrassi is canceled. After 14 seasons, they've pulled the plug on it, and I'm like, well, that's sad, but they haven't had a whole bunch of new plots. It's all been pretty much similar stuff, and you have the other show that they did, or that the creators did, called Open Heart, that's starting up, like just got it with its first season. So it's
a little. Is it canceled now, or is it being canceled? Is it going into its last season?
I believe it's canceled because I don't think they've aired, or I think they have aired all of season 14.
Because we left with, I know that one of the main characters was pregnant and she was dating one guy, and then she realized it was her ex's kid instead.
Oh, yeah.
And he wasn't talking to her because she, of course, got pregnant by another guy and stuff. So Aaron was, my wife, was ticked off because she wants to know what happens to them. And that's the thing with these soaps is you're always going to wonder what happens to them.
Well, I think she'll have to wait 20 years or 15 years or whatever for when they do the reboot of the reboot. And it'll be Claire's kid and all that. And Drew will
starting
be the
out
principal.
In school. Yeah, that is the thing, is like I remember when I first moved to California watching some old Degrassi on TV over to a friend's house. I think we put that in because we were looking for old recordings of Swan's Crossing, which is more what I watched. But it's cool. I mean, the show was around for 14 years. It was a big deal to a lot of people. I think there was a lot of nostalgia watchers like me and Glenn and Kevin Smith. Who watched the old stuff and were all excited to see the new stuff happen. And then there was a new generation of people watching them. Mm-hmm. Glenn posted a really funny article today from thebeaverton.com, which was basically an Onion-type article of Degrassi School condemned following 35 years of student-related tragedy. because of every bad, horrible thing that happened on that show. It's like, yeah, this school should be closed. It should be shut down. There's nothing good happening here. It's like if you're in Smallville and half the students in the class suddenly develop superpowers and turn into lizards and stuff, maybe you get the EPA in and you close the place down and move the students to safer environments. But they don't. And Degrassi, it's like, oh yeah, this kid dropped acid and then fell off a bridge on his head. And, you know, here's this other kid who overdosed and tons of teen pregnancies and stuff. There was a cheerleading boob flashing scandal last season. I think I saw part of. It's like,
yeah,
none of these adults are any good at this.
Well, they started to, because Degrassi, they always had the thing of they would try to do current events, like as current as you can do with scripted TV. And so this past season, they hit on, and surprisingly enough, with the same girl who the season before was in the, or had got sexually assaulted. So it's like, you would think that where I get where she came from in there, because they plotted it out in the story of, I want to take charge of my body and stuff like that. At the same time, by doing a Snapchat-like take on, you know, the whole Snapchat sexting thing with kids, it's with that character, it's like, okay, little skeevy sort of deal for her, for the character, yeah. not the writers or the producers or anything like that, because it was a good storyline, you know, but at the same time, having it be the girl who just got assaulted, you have a whole bunch of other girls in there. Why not make it the girl who's, you know, got the blue hair? Well, no, she was ditzy. But why not get a different girl? Sort of deal. But that was the other problem that they had, is they always focused on, it seems like they always focused on four or five people and then had these ancillary characters come in for some need.
It was a better mix than what 90210 or Saved by the Bell gave you, which is like you thought the school was just about these four or five kids. And it's like, I think it was an episode of 90210 when they were in high school where it was like the graduation episode or the prom episode or something, where they showed a video of like all the good times of school at the big collection of everybody. And it was just the people from the main show. It was like, nobody else was in any of the pictures at all. It's like, oh great. Yeah. I went here too. I just remember me.
Yeah,
I'm the kid who didn't get shot. That was David's friend. Maybe you throw down a little bit and try to include me in this.
No, it's like the episode of Boy Meets World when they're doing their graduation. And one of the dudes, I think it was Minkus, he's like, yeah, I've been over at the other side of the hall of the class or the school this whole time.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just like that. But no, it's like a good farewell, you know, maybe if after, you know, 10, 15, 20 years or whatever, it'll come back. Who knows?
I will say one of the things that I really liked in the last few seasons that Aaron, like I said, is a big fan of the show, was that they had a transgendered character.
Yeah.
As a big, one of the big main cast in the show. And I loved the development of that character. I think the character's name was Adam.
Yeah, Adam, just, Gracie was the name she was born with, and then she came out, and that was great storytelling with that whole thing, and way before Caitlyn Jenner, and you saw that with a lot of it becoming more normal here.
Well, it was very progressive for them to do, and especially because so many of the storylines, I mean, there were definitely storylines about being a transgendered person, but not every storyline was about that. And for so much of it, it was just people treated this obviously female actress portraying the character as a male person. And every once in a while, there was that person who sparked up and was like, no, that, you know, you're a girl or whatever. But for a lot of it, it was just acceptance. And I thought that was very important to see on TV. And probably the character that I thought was the most interesting on the show, obviously the one that sticks out the most in my head.
Yeah, no, yeah, and like you said, the actress who played who played Adam in there is a really good actress. She came right off of a Canadian kid show called Life with Derek. And I'm like, oh, wow, you look completely different, which is, it was expected.
It's impressive.
Yeah.
It's impressive to see, especially someone so young, take on that kind of role.
Like, I think she was 15, 16 when she started.
Yeah, that seems about right.
Yeah. But, so sad news for Degrassi fans, but let's talk some of the shows that we've been watching. Then the first one, is it series or season? Do we know? Does anyone know?
Nobody has said anything yet. If you're talking about Community, we have seen the final episode of the Yahoo-sponsored season 6. And there was the call out a couple years ago or a couple seasons ago of 6 seasons of the movie.
I think that was season 1, actually.
Was it really season 1?
I don't know. It might have been.
I just remember it at season 4 is when everyone kept putting the hashtag out. But I don't even know if there was a Twitter hashtag in season 1, so
feels no, but makes the me whole feel really 6 old. Seasons in a movie thing I think started in season 1.
Okay.
Like with Abed, and then it progressed as the show went on.
But the final episode was sort of a cap in, you know, we don't need a season 7. What would we do? It gives all the compelling reasons as to why season 7 shouldn't happen. And it also kind of separates the group even more. And we've already lost characters. We've lost Pierce. We've lost Troy. We've lost Shirley, although we've had a couple really good guest spots with Shirley, including in this episode. And it is sort of the same thing of like, if I'm watching 90210 or I'm watching Saved by the Bell, at what point do these kids get out of this school and how long can they keep making these characters stay there? You know, it's to a point now where 6 seasons is effectively 6 years for the show. The seasons do count as a year in time. They could have done it by semester if they wanted to. People have to move on. Things have to change, and it doesn't become a Community anymore. It becomes something else.
Well, and it sort of did with Jeff becoming a teacher and being on that side. I think Chang went back to being a teacher. But yeah, it is interesting. And I part of me does feel like this is a series finale because of the fact that we saw Jeff embrace Abed's meta-ness.
Yes.
With this.
Like, which he's done from time to time.
But it's always been more reluctantly than...
He's always fallen into the trap of it.
Yeah.
And here he was more desperate for it.
Yeah. Especially because with his thought of what would next year season, you know, with it being actually very much like Ron Swanson when they did the flash forwards on Parks and Rec on the final episode. Where you just see, or you know, and that going between and you see him look around and everyone is different and sort of freak out and, you know, have a little mini panic attack in the way
he just kind of stands up and says, "I quit," you know, and just walks out.
No, yeah.
Yeah, this was a hard episode. I mean, it's not like the show hasn't tugged on the heartstrings before, but I don't remember it ever being quite like this. And part of it was the finality, and part of it was also just the acceptance. You know, the Jeff Annie thing, never really going to happen. The Abed leaving was probably the hardest thing. Certainly, the hardest thing since Troy left.
Yeah,
is having that goodbye. It was rough. I mean, just as soon as the music started playing when he was driving him to the airport and saying goodbye to them, and then he hugged Abed, and then he pulled him in and he hugged him again. It was like, oh, I started tearing up.
Yeah.
And then they bring you that existential joke at the end of the family playing the Community game, which is just so excellent.
Yeah, and I did not realize this. It wasn't until watching Chord Killers today with Brian saying, this is, like, Dan Harmon comes in. And I'm like, that was Dan Harmon. Holy crap.
Also, did you get the point where they were showing like how the next seasons would work, and one of them had the cartoon character, and it was the voice of the guys from Rick and Morty?
Oh, yeah, I did notice that.
Like, I loved that.
But that one seemed to me more like it would fit than them doing The Simpsons.
Certainly. Yes.
Because, you know, it's same guy, essentially.
It's hard. Yeah.
Which I still need to get into Rick and Morty.
Oh, man. It's so back and forth. It goes from pretty good to great. Kind of like Community.
Yeah.
Community has its episodes that are just so, oh, my God, this is amazing. Then they have some episodes like, I'm still glad Community's on.
Yeah.
But it's never bad. It's just not as good as what you remember it being a couple episodes ago.
Yeah.
And then they have that next one, and you're like, holy crap.
No, and I think part of it is I don't know where exactly, like, I don't know if it's on AdultSwim.com, like all the episodes, because I've seen a few. But, so, yeah, I mean, I don't know, it's me being stupid. But no, so, like, Community, now, would you rather have another season or a movie?
I don't know. I just want something where the cast and the creator, where they want to come back to it.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't want to force another season on them if, you know, obviously some of them have other shows coming up. We found out that, I can't think of his real name all of a sudden,
Joel McHale
is going to be on the X-Files, which is only 6 episodes, and we don't know how big of a part he's going to play in it, but it's cool that he's going to be in it. We know that Chang is going to have a new sitcom on ABC that's already been piloted and greenlit. I think Danny Pudi has another show coming out or something that he was working on as well. So there's,
let me check that.
None of these people are stuck in this show. I wanted to be an event. I talked about that with the X-Files on Galactic Netcast recently. I loved the 6-episode idea of the X-Files because it makes it an experience and an event for the people who are working on it. Like, we can come together, we can spend a little bit of time and make some great stories again, and then we can go back to our day jobs, and it's kind of like a weekend vacation almost. It's probably a lot longer, but when you consider, like, Joss Whedon doing Shakespeare at his house over the weekend and turning it into a movie, it's sort of like that. It's like, hey, let's go together and do some Community. It's what I always hope is going to happen with Firefly, is that Joss is going to get everybody together, hang out, and just make some Firefly stuff, and then they go back to their regular day jobs. I don't know that will be the case, but it would be fine if I got like 5 episodes here and there of Community, or if I got a movie of Community. I just don't know what the movie would be.
Yeah, and this sort of broke my mind a little bit. Danny Pudi was in Captain America: The Winter Soldier.
Yes, he was one of the S.H.I.E.L.D. agents.
He was a comtech, and I'm like, wait, really? I don't... It's not computing.
Towards the end, when everybody's invading the S.H.I.E.L.D. headquarters again, he's one of the ones that they kind of grab in. It must have been like a tech room or something like that, or through one of the stairwells.
Yeah, and then one of the credits, and there isn't really anything like that he's doing afterwards. I don't know if it aired, but Newsreaders, he was in the episode How the Sausages Made Lottery Winners Lose. But the credit that I love the most is because how he's uncredited for it is Cougar Town, with the episode
Where he was Something in the Good Coming.
Yeah, where he plays Chad, brackets, Abinadir. Like, it's brilliant.
He has a new pilot on NBC, a comedy called Strange Calls.
Okay, yeah.
And the other centers on Pudi's Toby, an eager young cop who fears he's landed the world's lamest post when he's transferred to a sleepy coastal town straight out of Northern Exposure. Those fears are short-lived when he realizes the idyllic little town is secretly home to the most bizarre paranormal activity on the planet. And the one thing stranger than his cases is the eccentric local groundskeeper who is determined to be his partner. I mean, it sounds right up his alley.
Yeah. That's Strange Calls?
Yes. See, like I said, it's a pilot on NBC. I don't know if it's been greenlit for anything.
Yeah. And the other one that, like, it sort of shocked me. Like, I had this today with going through the feed, setting up for the splash page, and finding out that the dude who plays Crossbones is 50. I'm like, wait, he's 50? Holy cow, does he look good for his age?
Danny a lot Keaton's of those 30s. Marvel guys are in that age bracket, and holy cow, they look good for their age.
Yes. Well, Danny Pudi is 36. And I'm like,
yep.
You look like you could be my age, dude. Like, you look like you could be, like, it's weird. Like, I look like I could be 10 years older. He's looks like he'd be 10 years younger sort of thing, which is scary.
Yeah, but I mean, that's the Hollywood magic. We've always had 30-year-olds playing teenagers. I think Mark Paul Gosselier, when he won some Teen Choice Award, it was over Dylan McKay over on 90210, and Mark Paul's like, oh, cool, I beat the old guy. He's like, it's not a big deal or anything, but I'm actually a high school age person who's playing a high schooler on TV. It makes a little bit of sense that I would beat the guy who is, 40 years old and balding.
So let's switch gears from our community ish talk. And let's talk Sense8. Now, I have not seen any of the episodes. You and Beatmaster have both seen the first five. So should I be watching this TV show?
It's not an easy show. So I'm going to try to not, I can't really say that there's much to spoil in it, because plot wise, it moves very slowly. I knew more about the plot from the trailer for the show than I've gotten in the first five episodes of the show. I'm sort of there, but it's a slow build. So in a way, it's kind of like Lost and Heroes, but in another way, better. And I think probably it's the experience of being able to binge watch it versus sitting there and waiting for the episodes to come out week after week, and then holiday breaks, then more week after week. The slow build to what's happening. And, you know, obviously with both Heroes and with Lost especially, they stretch it out so much because they were just hoping to get as many seasons as they can to keep getting the advertisers because they're big deal TV. I don't think this is that bad. But it's not like, it starts with a very strong opening of this person is coming after you. There's someone who's gone through some things that it's a sci-fi slant already. Her character's eliminated. It's sort of passed on to I can't think of his name. He was on Lost. Naveem. I can't think of his name, unfortunately. Naveem,
yeah,
Andrews,
maybe? I know who you're talking about, yeah.
He is the character in the show that's kind of like supposed to be introduced to the other new characters that are coming in. The first episode is just introducing us to these eight characters, essentially, and what their lives are like. And then just the little trickle of the sci-fi aspect of they start to notice each other, even though they're living in totally different places. They have nothing to do with each other in their regular lives, but they start to pick up little things of I'm seeing things, and it's this person, it's this woman, or it's this man. I'm hearing things, I'm hearing sounds that are coming from where they're at. But the if you just watch it from the point of view of telling stories about these people, it's beautiful storytelling. Visually, it's gorgeous. The Wachowskis are doing it. And it's one of the most beautiful things I've seen them do, because it doesn't feel false. I mean, after you seeing The Matrix and living through that, and The Matrix was incredible when it came out, and the sequels were sort of a letdown because it was more of the same thing without as much of the grandiose story. It was just kind of, it didn't feel as true. This is more real world stuff that they're utilizing and just showcasing the beauty of the planet. The second episode has a Bollywood dance scene, and it's like, oh, okay, it's sort of cliche because we're in India and there are people who, you know, are of this culture and everything, so we got to work out Bollywood in there. But it makes sense in the context of what they're doing. The guy who's doing it is doing it kind of like how in wedding proposals here. We put them up on YouTube all the time. They try to make this big production, like all the friends get together and they dance and they do this stuff to the song or whatever. Or in weddings to do that, and it's sort of a flash mob kind of thing. He's doing this to kind of show his love for his fiance. And people complained about the Bollywood scene, and I just think it worked really well, and it was just beautiful. It was kind of a really amazing thing to see. The characters are very multicultural, multiracial, multigendered. There is a transsexual character, and it is actually played it. She is played by a transsexual actress. Which I thought was fantastic, because that's not often what you get with Hollywood stuff. You will get someone who is a woman who's playing a transgender who's supposed to be a woman, but you don't often find Hollywood hiring transgendered people.
And there's a debate to that. Like, people, and I think they did dodge a bullet if they found a... Now, how is the transgender? Is it male to female or female to male?
It's male to female.
Male, okay.
There's a scene where she's talking to her mother, and her mother refuses to acknowledge her in her new identity with her name as she's chosen, and the mother just keeps referring to her as Michael as opposed to Nomi.
Okay, so it's like it's easy to see, you know, them casting a female to play the role or whatever. And then everyone go, oh, they should have hired a transgendered character or whatever. Or
actor, yeah.
Yeah.
And that, like, that happens a lot. And,
yeah,
and
yeah, they've done it numerous times with,
look at the complaints right now about Cameron Crowe's movie Aloha with the fact that he hired Emma Stone to play a character that was, you know, a quarter Asian and a quarter Pacific Islander, and he chooses Emma Stone, who is an amazing actress. There's no fault in choosing Emma Stone to play a role in your movie, but if you're making her character hinge on her background of being from these two cultures and races, it seems disingenuous. And people called Cameron out on it before the movie came out and said, why would you do this? He's like, no, it's cool. When you watch it, you'll see, you'll understand. No, they didn't. They saw that he cast a young white actress to play this role where she, although the character, as I understand it, is supposed to not look like her heritage, and she has complaints about that herself. It's like no one sees her as her heritage, but they could have found actresses that suited that. It's a bummer.
They could have gotten Olivia Munn to do that, where...
if she was the right person for the part. That's the other thing, too, is you have to find the right person that you want to work with, that you think is the caliber to bring what you want to the role. It's difficult. It's sort of like, do I choose this or do I choose this? I want it to meet this criteria, but it also needs to meet this criteria. And what actress meets both of those? And if I'm going to have to cut myself at one side, which side do I choose?
Yeah.
So I don't want to turn this into a war against Cameron Crowe, because he's made a lot of movies I've liked, but that's not really letting him off the hook. It's more just it happens a lot.
Yeah.
One of the hugest complaints about the Avatar, the last Airbender movie, was the fact that it was so many white actors playing characters that was a very multicultural show. You know, the original source material was all about the multicultures, and he chose to completely skip that. In doing the film, and people were upset. They called him out on it.
That
happens with so many different things. It's always frustrating. I understand the frustrations of it. At the other end of it, you get things like the Adam Sandler movie, where they actually hired Native Americans to be in the film, and then they found that the material they were given was so racially insensitive towards their people that they walked off.
Yeah,
and they were 100% right to do it. I completely support him in that. Not because I don't expect that from Adam Sandler, because that's Adam Sandler's humor. That's his movies. It's kind of like you should know what you're signing up for when you go to take that job. But you also don't deserve to stand around and be insulted no matter what the job.
No, yeah, true. And I mean, I think the point I was getting at with it is because we'll see a lot of people throw out race, especially with comic book properties. Like Olivia Munn actually got some heat on that with for playing Psylocke because she doesn't look Asian enough. Well, she's I want to say half Asian,
I don't remember what Psylocke's nationality or Olivia Munn's nationality is, but she's supposed to be half Korean, but she's actually half Chinese or the vice versa or something. It's not always going to be perfect. It absolutely isn't, and it can't be. But it's nice when the opportunity is there that you go with that opportunity. And it obviously, considering the Wachowskis, one of them is transgendered. It probably meant more to her to have someone who actually was to play that part. I don't think the only factor, because the actress has been amazing in it.
Yeah, and it makes sense, though, with doing that. You know, you take out all the political bullcrap, it makes more sense there where you get a movie like Kingsman, Secret Service, where they tried to get a double amputee to play in that one role that eventually went to a woman who has both her legs, and they just CG'd them out. They were going to go with Oscar Pistorius at one point in time, and then all that stuff happened. So it's like, no. And you get where you can't do stunt casting in that aspect and then have your film suffer, because then the same people are going, oh, well, you didn't get a person who's suffering from the same disease to play in The Theory of Everything. and you know, just random, stupid, I'm on the internet, I'm going to argue bullcrap.
Yeah, I mean, the fact of the matter is that you're a filmmaker. You make the best movie that you can by the highest criteria that you can achieve. And somebody's going to find some way to piss and moan about it. You can't win other than by making great art.
To continue on with the trend from Daily Tech News Show, the haters are going to hate.
I saw a lot of that in the IMDb boards because I am a glutton for just making myself sick. I went to the IMDb boards about this show, about Sense8, and probably 70% of it is just people so pissed off because of the gay agenda and the transsexual agenda being shoved down their throats. And I'm like, it seems like when you turned on the show and you got to the point where you realized that there was a transsexual character in it, or you got to the point where you realize that there was a homosexual character in it, because there's both, you turn off the show. They're complaining about parts in the show that I haven't even gotten to yet. So obviously they weren't so pissed off that they couldn't stomach watching it. They kept watching it and just wanted to seethe and hate more. Screw you people.
No,
I enjoyed the show.
Yeah, it's...
It is a little graphic at points. It is a little bit, like, pretty quickly into it. It's very graphic. But if you don't take offense to either sexual nature stuff or different lifestyle stuff or different race stuff or any number of things that might be sensies for you, I'm enjoying the heck out of the show.
Okay.
And so, I just kept watching it all day yesterday, and I felt bad stopping at episode 5 when it was done. But it was kind of like I knew that I wanted to watch Game of Thrones before the night went on.
Yeah. So how many episodes are there of Sense8?
I believe it is 13 episodes.
13? Okay. So I will offer this up to you this way. Do we binge through and talk about it all next week, or do we stop and go, okay, we'll do episode 6, 7, 8, because you've sold me on this. I'm gonna watch it, so I'll get at least up. I'll try to get up to the first first six episodes, so we can have my opinions on the first 5, and then we can both talk about episode 6.
I have no idea where I'm gonna be this week. You know, like what I'm gonna be headspace on.
Oh, no,
I'm the same. I do really well binge watching on Sundays. That seems to be the day, even though Aaron was off yesterday, it just kind of worked out. I'm not going to put a criteria on watch this many or watch all of it, because I don't know that I'm going to be able to watch all of it. But if we get to next week and I've watched all of it and you've only watched episode 6, then we'll talk about episode 6.
Yeah,
I have no problem with that. I think you'll like the show. I think you'll also like that the character Nomi's girlfriend is Martha from Doctor Who.
Yeah, I've heard that from everyone. I'm like, oh, okay,
and she's
cool.
Great. Yeah. I've never really seen the character because I didn't watch those seasons of Doctor Who, and I never got to the episodes of Torchwood she was in, so I don't know that much about her.
Freema Agamar or something like that? Or Freya Agamar? I believe it's her name.
She's great in this. Yeah. Most of the cast is very, very good in this. Even the characters that I don't care as much about yet are very good. And it's only one or two that I'm just, all right. But I see potential in all of it. And by the end of the third episode, it gets incredibly exciting.
Yeah.
By the end of the fourth episode, there is a musical number, not a Bollywood one, just a song playing and everybody feeling the song and feeling it from different places. And it's a song that I kind of loathe. Having lived through it being played all the time in the 90s, and my wife really likes the song, and I just can't stand it. I really liked this scene. It's What's Up by Four Non Blondes.
Sounds familiar.
Their only hit, and I just have never been able to stand it. But in this scene, in this context, it is amazingly good what they do with it. I cannot tell you how cool this show seems to be getting, and from the people I've seen that do like it, they seem to like it more as it goes on. They say that it gets stronger with each episode, and so far that's kind of what I'm feeling too. I've not felt a lull. I felt like a slow start that gets to more anticipation, more anticipation, more anticipation, with like striking moments, but we still have barely, I mean, at 5 episodes in, I barely scratched the surface on what they're doing and certainly what the conceit of the show is. It's hardly started yet. It's so good, though.
Okay, so just as a sidetrack here, because I've YouTube searched for the song, because as growing up in the 90s, I was like, oh, it sounds familiar. But Four Non Blondes has a Vivo channel on YouTube.
Oh, I'm sure. But I think they only had the one album, or at least certainly the one popular album.
This is not sounding familiar to me.
Doesn't matter.
Yep. Got
just
to the chorus.
Just watch it for the show.
Got to the chorus. Yeah.
just watch the show. Don't even, you know, I almost feel bad spoiling it for you in the sense that you're going to be looking for that moment. But when that moment happens, it's great. Yeah. It is such good TV. And J. Michael Straczynski is the writer.
Does he write all the episodes?
I don't know if he's writing all the episodes or what. I haven't paid that much attention, but he did with Babylon 5 back in the day. He's done it with other things. His Top Cow comics, like Rising Stars, was a series that I really liked and was also very slow. It was kind of the precursor to Heroes in a lot of ways. I think this is a show that's going to get him some more attention again, because he's kind of been back and forth with his comic works. His runs on Wonder Woman and DC before the New 52 launch were not well received. Wonder Woman's came with a very bad costume change, and Superman had him walking the earth like Kane in Kung Fu.
So J. Michael Straczynski was responsible for the pirate version of Wonder Woman. Is that the one you're talking about?
I guess that's one way of looking at it. Yeah, the Jim Lee redesigned pants,
jacket.
Yeah,
okay. Yeah, I remember hearing about that. So I'm gonna try to catch up at least to episode 6 by next week, because I think, you know, especially with the summer with not a lot of shows out, this might be something that'll hold us up for a while.
Yeah, I mean, this was sort of a surprise to me to even look at it. I was on my Roku watching Community, and the Roku advertisements kept saying, Sense8, check out Sense8. And I'm like, oh yeah, I think I heard something about Sense8 coming out. And sure, I'll check out an episode because I'll see, you know, if I want to talk about it on the show or not. And once I got through that first one, I just jumped to the next, and then I jumped to the next, and then I jumped to the next. And pretty soon that was my whole afternoon.
Nice. So let's do Starts and Stops, and then we'll talk about some of the other shows. So Starts and Stops for you audio listeners, it's basically me combing through all of the next 7 days, if you watch this next day, so of what's coming out and what's ending and all that. Starting with Tuesday, June 9th, we have the, Game 3 of the NBA Finals, and at 9, which will start at 9 p.m., and then on CW, you have the first season finale, also at 9, of iZombie, with the episode called Blaine's World. And I always just want to go, like, in my head, I'm always like, Blaine's World! Party hot time! Excellent! Every time.
Every time.
And then on both A&E and FYI, at the same, at 9 p.m. still, you have the two-hour second season finale of Married at First Sight. And at 10 p.m. on TBS, you have the first season finale of Your Family or Mine. TV Land has the first season finale of Younger, that being the Hilary Duff show. Wednesday, we have, Wednesday, June 10th, we have at 8 p.m. on Pop, the one-hour first season finale of Queens of Drama. And at 9 p.m. on Game Show Network, the second season premiere of Skin Wars. And then at 11 p.m. on MTV2, the seventh season premiere of Nick Cannon Presents Wild and Out. I could make a really bad joke there, but I'm not going to, because that would not, I don't want to. I sort of would do, but it's like, no, hold it. And then on Thursday, June 11th at 8 p.m. on CW, it's the third season premiere of Beauty and the Beast, or as I like to call it, how is that show still on?
As a summer series, I think it makes a little bit more sense.
Yeah.
I am not, the show was just.
Well, but let's put it this way. Let's put it this way. CW does any more DC TV shows, they're going to need the summer for some of these shows, which could be the death knell for Beauty and the Beast.
Well, I mean, look how many reruns of episodes they're playing in the summer anyway. So one or two nights where they've got actually some new content, I don't know, they're going to be hurting for space.
Yeah. And Fox has the 10th season finale of Bones. At 9 p.m. on CNN, you have the series premiere of The 70s. 10 p.m. On Sci-Fi, you have the third season premiere of Defiance. And at 11 p.m. on CMT, you have the series premiere of The Josh Wolf Show, their foray into late-night television. On Friday, June 12th at 3:01 a.m., you have on Netflix the third season premiere of Orange is the New Black. At 6 p.m. on Cartoon Network, the second season finale of Uncle Grandpa. Wait, what? I messed up somewhere. At 9 p.m. on Disney XD, you have the one-hour series finale of Phineas and Ferb, with the episode rightfully titled The Last Day of Summer. At 10 p.m. on Sci-Fi, the series premiere of Dark Matter. And Pivot has the second season premiere of Hit Record on TV. And at 10:30, Pivot has the series premiere of Secret Lives of Americans. On Saturday at 11:30 a.m., you have the 100th episode of My Little Pony, Friendship is Magic, episode called Slice of Life. At 1:30 on Discovery Family Channel is Transformers Rescue Bots, the third season finale. At 10 p.m. on BBC America is the series premiere of Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell. And I'm going to watch that mainly because Beatmaster said it's good. But also, I recognize many people on there from other British shows. I'm like, oh, that looks really good.
I've seen commercials for it. It does look very interesting. I was hoping to check it out, too. But Beatmaster giving us the go-ahead definitely ups the ante.
Well, he's asked me if I was going to cover it for Posse of the Queen, and I'm like, has it come out here in America yet? Because I don't really have a way to watch British shows anymore. But also at 10 p.m. on AFI, on TBS, you have the 90-minute special presentation of AFI Lifetime Achievement Award, a tribute to Steve Martin.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Hope he plays banjo.
Oh, yes.
I love Steve Martin for his acting, for his writing, for his comedy, but there is nothing I love Steve Martin more than is when he's playing his banjo.
Oh, we do at my church in the children's ministry where I'm at, we have, before the storyteller goes up, these song clips. And for one of the themes, I don't know what the theme was about. I think it might have been like sharing or something like that. We played Steve Martin doing dueling banjos with Kermit the Frog.
Yeah.
For a whole month. And I'm like, yes. And excellent. For the next 2 months, that's the theme right there, sir. Superheroes. So you know I'm ready for that. And then at 11 p.m., another show that really sparked my eye. It's Jeff Ross Roasts Criminals on Comedy Central, live at Brazos County Jail. And then at 11:15 on BBC America, it's the new time slot for the Graham Norton Show. This episode, I believe, has Chris Pratt in it, if that wasn't this past week's episode. And he's really good. And there, this past week's episode of it with Stephen Merchant that aired over in the UK is really funny. Stephen Merchant is hilarious. On Sunday, June 14th, we have more possible basketball, depending on how the playoffs go, with Game 5. And then at 9 p.m. on HBO, you have the fifth season finale of Game of Thrones. And at 10 p.m. on FYI, you have the first season finale of Outback Nation. HBO has the second season finale of Silicon Valley. At 10:30, you have, or Veep has the fourth season finale on HBO. And then on Monday, at 10 p.m., AMC has the series premiere of Making of the Mob. And at 11 p.m., Sundance has the Behind the Story, this is the first season finale of Behind the Story with the Paley Center, with Masters of Sex as the show that they're talking about. And that's it for starts and stops. On to the movie draft update, where Beatmaster will get on the board next week, I believe.
Beatmaster.
Yeah, but the spots still have not changed, with Beatmaster yet to have a movie come out. He will have one out next week, though, as I just said. Corey's in third place with $279.6 million. I'm in second with $360.9 million. And Evan is in first with, I think, half of his movies as well, with $560.5 million. Just over half of his movie. No, all but one out right now.
Yeah, all but one, because Spy came out. And Spy is doing very well. And getting great reviews too. So I'm impressed and sort of excited, because my wife is a Melissa McCarthy fan. I like Melissa McCarthy, but I don't necessarily like all of her movies. It seems like some of her movies have been Paul Blart-ish, and this one, the commercials make it look Paul Blart-ish, but as I understand it, it is nothing of the kind.
And this is what interests me, is people are talking about it because, you know, Melissa McCarthy, known for her comedy. A lot of people are not talking about her comedy. They're talking about Jason Statham and what he's doing. And I'm like, all right, that's okay. Good on you, man. So
I'm hearing a lot of great stuff about her in it too, not in the over the top slapsticky, fat one fall down kind of comedy that I think the expectations are from. Unfortunately, from a lot of the movies that she's in, it's not that they're always like that, but it's just they're pitched like that. And I kind of think it's weird that Hollywood is making better films and better roles for a woman like her, but the commercials are still being shown to be that old stereotype. And I find that a little frustrating, because I'm glad that Spy's doing really well. I wonder if it would do even better if they had pitched it better. I saw the commercials and I wasn't really that interested in it. Even seeing the trailer when we went to the movies a couple weeks ago, the trailer had some stuff that wasn't in the main commercials, but it wasn't, again, it didn't look like anything outstanding. And I'm hearing such great stuff about it, I kind of want to drag Aaron to go see it, although I think obviously Insidious 3 is our next thing. She came to me yesterday and she's like, we have to watch Insidious 1 and Insidious 2 this week so we can go see 3. I said, yes, that was the promise.
And just to fill in with the Graham Norton Show, this week's episode is Melissa McCarthy, which they talk about Spy, Jude Law, who's her co-star, Chris Pratt, and John Bishop, which John Bishop is a hilarious British comedian, and Jude Law is, of course, they're plugging it. But and they actually hit on that in the interview with when they were talking, focusing more on Melissa McCarthy, of the fact that it's not her doing full slapstick. Like you see right. her when she's in like Identity Thief or, you know, insert any other movie she's done in the past. It's sort of like, I think they've said that like she flips the role a little bit. Like she's more the action star and, you know, you have the quote unquote action stars be doing more of the comedy and all that, which
yeah,
I found really good. And then this week's episode or next week's episode that we're here has Samuel L. Jackson, Amy Schumer, and Stephen Merchant. Awesome lineup. Just freaking amazing.
Very cool.
So I want to talk about, there's two shows that I want to talk about, and then we could talk about, I'm assuming that's a movie that you watched. But the first, and then we should probably talk about Game of Thrones. But the first show that I really want to hit on, it's Three Scientists Walk Into a Bar. This is from the Weather Channel, and this is I want to say it's like a backdoor pilot thing, sort of like how Hacking the System was for Nat Geo, where they did, you know, okay. two specials. So it was three episodes. They star Anthony Carboni, who you will know from Revision 3. He's currently doing We Have Concerns with Jeff Cannata. And then Tara Long, also formerly from Revision 3, where they both did a show called Because Science that... a lot of this is very much Because Science. And then there's a dude who is a rocket scientist named Dr. Travis. I'm blanking on his last name, but like I watched this, I flipped through and I saw it. I'm like, oh, hey, I want to watch this. And it came to him and I'm like, why do they have a redneck talking? And I'm like, oh, he's the rocket scientist in here. Okay. But no, they covered about like three different weather related things because haha, they're on the Weather Channel. But they were really fun to watch, and they had Anthony Carboni as like they all had like titles. Like the Dr. Travis was the rocket scientist. Anthony is the science fanatic, and Tara Long is the chief statistician because she's a published stats person, statsman. I think is a technical term there that I'm making up right now because I don't know what it would be. But no, it's really interesting. And I think if enough people watch it, it might go to be made into a full series like Hacking the System was. And it's really good. And I think one of the most original programs that Weather Channel's had that isn't... Now, here's your local weather, which they still show at the bottom, but it's good. And then the other show...
The doctor you're talking about is Travis Taylor. He's an astrophysicist, aerospace engineer. He was on something called Rocket City Rednecks.
Okay, yeah.
And Tara Long is a statistician.
Yes. And she was... I know her from Because Science, and then she hosted the Destructoid show on Revision 3 back when they did a lot of their own content before getting bought by Discovery Digital. It's really good, really fun. With how they demonstrated the Coriolis effect, it was an interesting take on it. I'm like, that's nice. Like they made a spinning seesaw and had people throw a basketball, like pass it back and forth while it's spinning. And you're like, what are you doing, dude? Come on, you're doing it wrong. You know, throw it straight at her. And every time he would do it, it'd be like, zoop. Like, oh, yeah, you see, it looks like it's curving to them, but really, it's going in a straight line. I'm like, that's a good point. And it's brilliant. I love the show because I love science and all that stuff. The other show, which I would not be surprised if they started talking about on Sci-Fi Geeks Club, is Stitchers. This is that ABC family show that's got the sci-fi elements to it.
I recorded it. I haven't had a chance to watch it yet.
It's good. It's interesting. It definitely suffers a little bit from pilotitis. But it has, and for the really sci-fi nerdy people out there, Allison Scagliotta is in there from Warehouse 13.
Right.
And
she also played Jaina as one of the Wonder Twins on the Smallville episode.
I did not know that.
I am that geek who was just like, all right, I'm not watching Smallville at this point, but I'm watching the episode with the Wonder Twins. And the only reference to Gleek was that she had a case on her iPhone that had a purple monkey on it.
That's another show I need to watch all the way through.
Oh, I don't know that you do.
Because I see references like, oh, they had this superhero in there. I'm like, wait, what? They had Booster Gold in an episode? What? How did I not know this? And all that. It's one that I want to do, not really for a podcast or anything like that. It's just like, I don't know. But no, so Stitchers, it's the basic premise is, and I'm going to try to leave this vague. The main actress, or the main character suffers from time displacement or dysplasia, I believe is how they say it, where basically she doesn't perceive time the way we do. Like she's, and they also, the way she acts, it sounds like it's a form of Asperger's or something like that, because she has trouble, or she's had to learn tricks on how to tell people's emotions and stuff like that. And so we go through here, and she's really smart, brainy, a genius, gets kicked out of school, like, you know, on double secret probation or whatever, and then gets recruited by this secret section of the military, of the government, to help solve crimes, to solve murders, by, in a very similar way to iZombie, where Liv eats the brains. They preserve the body real quick and stitch her into the dead person's memories. And right. So there's your sci-fi element to it. And it's the way they have it done is really good. The visual effects there are not, we don't have that budget sort of deal. Like they get rid of that. In here, it looks like we might get a couple episodes later on down the road that you don't really see you start to see, oh, this is why the pilot looks so good. But for the pilot, hey, it all looked really good. Even with one of the explosions, it didn't look like CGI background sort of deal. But it's really enjoyable sci-fi, you know, especially for where we're at right now, like, you know, it's a summer sci-fi show. If ABC Family didn't do the whole let's split shows up into two, like the split seasons up into two and do like summer and then winter, I would say it fit perfectly worth where it's at right now. But I don't know. Their ABC Family likes to do weird things like that. So you saw a movie.
I did, and this is where we talk about bad sci-fi.
Yeah.
You know, there's this thing that I keep hearing is, like, the Sci-Fi Channel is getting their crap together, and they're starting to make better quality stuff again. They're starting to get back to real sci-fi stuff. This movie is a 2015 film. Now, granted, it is the fifth in two different film franchises, as I understand it. One is Lake Placid, of which I really enjoy the first one. It had Oliver Platt in it. And you can't go too far wrong with Oliver Platt. The other is Anaconda, which had Ice-T and Jennifer Lopez in it and was a piece of horrid crap. So you can go very wrong with Anaconda. This was wrong on every level. Apparently by around the third Lake Placid, they brought in Yancey Butler, she of Witchblade, the TV series, and I think that's about it, and Robert Englund from Freddy Krueger, the original Freddy Krueger, as recurring characters, and apparently they kept dying and then coming back in the next movie anyways, and then dying, come back in the next movie anyways. Robert Englund apparently loses some body part in each film because he's missing a leg and he's missing a hand. And at the end of this one, spoilers away, he's missing an eye. But he comes back, much like Freddy Krueger does. When the credits come on and I'm seeing the names coming up on this after the opening scene, which the opening scene was all the creatures are CGI'd, not good CGI'd, it's sci-fi CGI'd. So if you see a crocodile, it is in never any little tiny bit a real crocodile. Oh, by the way, yes, Ice Cube, not Ice Tea. My mistake. I feel bad for both of them. And when you see the giant snakes, it's not real giant snakes. It's not even small snakes blown up. It's just horribly CGI'd snakes. What should have been CGI'd was the cast. Because I see the names come up and I see Corey Nemec. I'm like, oh, Corey Nemec. Parker Lewis can't lose until Parker Lewis is over. And then everything he's done since then has kind of been a loss. And then I see Yancey Butler. And then I see Robert Englund. I'm just like, of course. And then I see a bunch of names that I don't recognize from anything and will probably never see in anything ever again. I guess a lot of them are British, I think, where they're filming. Usually these things go up to Toronto because they've got great deals there for making films. Apparently these people decided to do it overseas. So it's a bunch of British people doing really bad American accents, except for the three main leads. It was an excuse to have girls, because there's two cars full of sorority girls who are, you know, it's the two main bitchy girls who are trying to get all the recruits in and putting them through torturous tests and stuff, but no one seems to really give a crap about it. Going to the beach so we can haze them at the beach, because we've got to all be in bikinis because we're sorority girls, and then some of us are going to get eaten by crocodiles and get chased around in the woods in bikinis because we're sorority girls. In a sci-fi movie on the Sci-Fi Channel, it was terrible. It was basically like this, hopefully, I know they're doing Sharknado 3, so this can't even be the last gasp, but it's got to be close. If they are trying to get their mojo back, this is the kind of thing that has to go away. It just has to stop. So I hope, I don't even know why I sat through the whole thing. My wife is sitting there and she's like, what is this? And I told her, and she's like, oh, God. I said, yeah, but who knows? And then we saw the first minute and a half of it. We're like, we know, but I kept watching. And she just kept looking at me and laughing. Like, every time I give her crap about the horrible stuff that she watches, and she watches really cheesy horror movies, too, I don't get to make fun of her anymore. This was the worst. But that's about it. That's all I can really say about it. Giant snakes. Crocodiles. No personality in anybody. Good times.
Now this.
Hey, how about Game of Thrones?
Yeah, because I was looking on the IMDb page to see if, because with how you're describing this, it sounded like it would work perfectly on. Like, it wouldn't surprise me if it was distributed by the same people who did Sharknado, and you know a lot of them other. Movies, but it looks like no, it's not, which surprises me.
No, what it looks like is if you back when Blockbuster was still around, there was that movie company that they would always have films from, like, okay, so you've seen Titanic, so we're going to show you this other thing that's like Titanic 2 or Titanic Disaster, and it's another movie that looks like it's supposed to be the original movie. You've seen Aliens versus Predator, here's Alien versus Predators. And it's nothing to do with the Aliens or Predator franchises. It's just like we cut the words that we can use and it sounds the same thing. There's a company that does that specifically. Oh, you've seen Twister. So here's Tornadoes.
That's the people who do The Asylum. Or The Asylum is the distributor. And because I'm looking through here, I'm like, holy crap. They did an a Mockbuster is what they're called. They did a Mockbuster of Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. And it was probably better than Indiana Jones. It's called Alan Quartermain. But anyways, Game of Thrones.
Yes, the Alan Quartermain movies were in the 80s. There were Alan Quartermain movies at that point in time. Alan Quartermain is a well-known character. I think that's who Sean Connery played in League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. He's a very well-known character that they tried to make a new Indiana Jones type film, but it had none of the charisma or charm of what Indiana Jones has. But they've tried a couple of times since because it's, I don't know if it's public domain, but it's probably pretty close to, it has to be public domain if it's in League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. The only one that wasn't was Tom Sawyer, who shouldn't have been in that story anyways, but they had to shove him in because we need American people, you idiots. This is Hollywood.
Yeah, we don't talk about that. Yeah. Much like we probably won't talk about the next movie that comes out that they'll do of that one. But anyways, Game of Thrones. So half of your friends pretty much called it, what, F that show?
F that show. That was what I kept seeing pop on my wall. I'm like, I have to watch Game of Thrones tonight because everybody hates it. Everybody's really, really mad at it. And I again reference you to the fact that nobody on the show is my favorite. I don't like or care for anybody on the program because you can't love. You can't love and watch Game of Thrones.
But no, yeah, I mean, I'm that optimistic person where, you know, I will sit there and I'll get my heart torn out because, oh, yep, you're starting to feel for Noah? Well, he's going to die now. Oh, you're starting to feel for this character? Oh, yeah, he's gone. Like, and strangely enough, I think Amy from Galecton Netcast, and she's in the Tadpole, she took one of those quizzes that's like, which Game of Thrones character are you? I die in the first episode.
Yeah.
I'm Nettered Stark. But yeah.
I think the only thing the show is missing is somebody that is that tragic love story that keeps coming back to life, going and finding their true love again, getting so close to them, like the Lady Hawk thing, and then they get killed all over again, and the struggle just continues on and on. Because that's the only heart ripper that we need still in the show, is it seems that's it. This episode, I understand why people are upset. It was in spoiler territory, obviously, that we should just put an announcement at the beginning of the show. A character that was just totally innocent, totally sweet, ain't hurting nobody. You're rooting for her. You just think, Dad's not a great guy, but Dad loves his kid. Dad loves the throne more.
Yeah.
And Dad, it was telegraphed, though. We've been seeing it build up to this scene. Anybody who's sitting there watching the show and going, well, but he's not going to do it. Of course he's not going to do it. Of course he's going to do it. It's Game of Thrones.
Yeah. That scene, which is with what you're talking about, is the girl with the, what's that called? The
dragon scale.
Dragon scale?
I think is what it is.
It's, yeah, they talk about, or like, they burn her at the stake and all this stuff as some appeasement to the god or whatever.
Because she is of the same bloodline as Stannis is, and they have to sacrifice blood relatives of his for him to gain power so they can, you know, survive the winters when they basically, Ramsay Bolton went and took 20 men and killed all their horses and killed a bunch of their people and just made it impossible for them to survive out in the elements. So this was the only way that they could try to get some power back. They had done this before with one of the Baratheon bastards of the king who was killed at the beginning to create the smoke monster, essentially, from Lost that the witch gave birth to and went and killed one of the other. I forget who was killed. It was, I don't remember. There's so many characters. This season, at the very least, has been far easier to keep track of. One, we're so many seasons in that we kind of recognize people now. But yeah. Two, it's been very focused on key characters.
Yeah, and the other thing I'm really liking about this is we're finally further than the books. We finally
we're away from the books. They can't follow the books at this point.
Yeah. Yeah, we are further along than where the books are at, so we get to be the a-hole saying, "Hey, guess what? We're spoiling it for you."
I do not want to be that a-hole. Again, you watch the show. You know, it's up to you if you watch the show, but I'm not I saw so many people posting last night, and I fortunately at that point in time knew what was happening or knew what had happened.
Yeah.
But there was a lot of things of like Stannis Baratheon's picture with Father of the Year on it, and I was okay with it personally, but I'm a little ticked off again for the people who haven't had the chance to see the show yet. My mm-hmm. friend from work, it was on a plane yesterday, flying out to New York for the week, and so I know he didn't get to watch it last night. Maybe he got to watch it in his hotel room if he didn't just pass out as soon as he got there. And, you know, he just recently started on Facebook, so I'm sure he's going to have friends on his wall who are posting BS about, you know, here's what happened on Game of Thrones. Should have watched it last night, dumbass. Ha ha. I don't dig on that. You know, no, I'm not trying to wreck anybody's fun.
I can see a lot of the people who get butt hurt because, oh, it was better in the books, or, oh, here's what's going to happen in the books.
Or this character scripts. Wasn't raped in the books. This other character was, and we don't care about her.
Stuff like I could see them, you know, flipping the script and going, ah, I guess what? We're going to spoil it for you now if you're trying to avoid watching it because you want to read the book first. But anyway, I don't know. It's not me either, but I mean, I could see a whole bunch of people doing that. I have to say, I'm pretty impressed with the fact that we've had two episodes back to back with impressive CGI work.
Battles too, yeah. Which it's not just a matter of the CGI, it's how well that they're choreographed and play out. And wow, that was a moment. That was a moment that came out of nowhere last night. It shouldn't have been. It should have been like, oh yeah, by the way, you're in an exposed area and there's thousands of people around you. You might be in trouble, but wow, that was cool.
Yeah. No, yeah, and I mean, with the fact that you have the whole battle scene, there's only like two spots that I noticed in there. I'm like, you could have touched this up a little bit. Looks a little fake here. And it was like, I think it was just with the people up in the top running. Like it looked like it was the same group of people running like here, which is fine. Understandable. You know, people their eyes wouldn't tend to go up to their, you know, they're going to be drawn here. But the other part was, when she goes to touch Drago, when Dany goes to touch Drago, or Dragon, I think is his name, that looked a little, hey, look, I'm in front of a green screen right now.
Yeah, I mean, animating a dragon, which is already a out-of-the-ordinary creature, and trying to add a human to that, and things that, there's the extraordinary with the ordinary, and getting them to mesh together well is always kind of tough.
Yeah,
But overall, it's still very impressive for the show.
Yeah, and
the scene is so good, you just kind of fall into it.
Yeah, it's one of those things, like, if that's a little nitpick, like a 3-second, or not even 3-second scene is what you're going to complain about a scene that big, where if this was 10 years ago, or, you know, 10, 15 years ago, we'd be like, oh my gosh, this looks horrible. Yeah, we've come a long way. Like, yeah. We can get past that.
Also, like the moments in it, the whole fighting scene of the two guys protecting Daenerys, and then her maiden who's always with her being kind of left, and then Tyrion being the one to kick ass and save her. That was a great moment too, because they had just been having the discussion over the big mighty guy versus the small quick guy, and Tyrion just biting his tongue the whole time, and the betrothed to Daenerys is like, you know, I always bet my money on the big tough guy. And Tyrion's just sitting there like, you know, whatever. You know, I still think this is stupid, but okay. And he just got approved. Size is not everything.
Oh, yeah.
You can kind of sneak around and take somebody down. So good.
Oh, yeah.
Like, there's definitely been tough points on the show, and I again attribute the tough points to it's a tough story. You know, if it's a show that you can't handle, you should not be watching it. You can't keep coming back and complaining about it. By now, you know. You know what the show is. But when you do get past those things, or if you can get past those things, some of the moments on the show, especially the softer moments, just the character moments of talking about things, the political stuff, the deep-rooted actual intrigue of the show, You know, you're waiting for Arya to get her revenge. You're waiting for someone to kind of like take down the leadership in the kingdom. But all these key things that happen to kind of like stretch it out sort of are so good that I don't feel bad that the story hasn't progressed a lot this season. Like Brianna's just been sort of standing outside a window the whole season waiting to get Sansa to signal for her. Tyrion was, I'm in a box. I'm in this other country. Finally shows up to Daenerys last episode.
No, hold on. You missed a step there because it was like Russian nesting dolls. I'm in a small box. Now I'm in a bit slightly bigger box. Now I'm in this whorehouse because I couldn't see it being in other boxes.
No, well, it's your imp in a box. So one, put your imp in that box. Two, make her open the box. I don't remember. It's just...
Oh, that's great.
There was something about cutting a hole. I don't remember. And you probably need to do that before the imp was in there. There's such great scenes in what is overall, it could just be like, oh, they could have cut this down half and it would be fine. No, because all the other stuff is actually kind of better.
Yeah.
You know, there's just some great stuff, great character stuff in between those big giant action scenes, which are also really good though.
Yeah, it was. And I don't know, the only other show I want to give a quick mention of, because like I love we've nailed Game of Thrones, I feel. Like it's good. Watch it if you're not watching it. And is Steven Universe.
Left this season.
Yeah, it's one episode left. You can catch up on the other nine right now. But no, the other show I want to talk about real quick is Steven Universe, because I've been watching, now that Cartoon Network's on there, hey, it's summertime, guys. Watch us. I've had it on while I've been on here, you know, doing other things, trying to get the website up, you know, stuff like that, which I'm not going to lie, I just started doing that 4 hours ago.
Hey, whatever.
But yeah, as I was watching, I'm like, there's some great storytelling in here, especially towards the latter half of the season. So much so that there's one episode called Full Disclosure where it's like a four or five part episode arc thing right here. And this is the 15 minutes, not like the whole 30. But where he's talking, where his friend Connie is calling him, I made that my ringtone. So I'm like, that's so freaking catchy. Just the do, 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 do. And then they go into a song with it. And I'm like, ah, it's brilliant. And I just saw the episode where they crossed over with Uncle Grandpa. And that was hilarious because they found a way to justify surreal comedy with this lighthearted action cartoon. Surreal. And it was perfect.
I've only seen it here or there. And the times that I have seen it, I've been so impressed with it. And it feels like such a great mythology that you're right. I mean, it's deeply developed, and I kind of want to go in and watch it from the beginning. I'm like that with Adventure Time too. I've seen, especially the episode with Magdalene or Margalien. I don't remember her
Marceline.
Name. Marceline and the Ice King.
Yeah,
and they're kind of singing stuff back and forth to each other, and you feel like there's some huge revelations in this, but it's a payoff if you've been watching it all along. And I haven't seen all that other stuff, but it's so emotionally deep and moving and beautiful in just that episode alone. And I'm like, man, I need to go and get into the show. It's one of those things that if I had a Sunday where I could just watch a bunch of Adventure Time or watch a bunch of Steven Universe, that would be a good way to blow a weekend.
Yeah,
you're right. And I think this is something that I've asked a lot before is when you're writing for kids, it's okay for kid shows to be kid shows. I don't have a huge problem with that. But I don't think it's necessary to write down to children. Never write down to your audience, adults as well. It's so much better to give them something that they can kind of grow into and inspire them to want to learn to get more out of.
Mm-hmm.
It's a trick of educating people as opposed to making a program where, and here's where we're going to do a little bit of math, or here's the final part of G.I. Joe where we tell you how to stop, drop, and roll so you don't burn yourself when you catch on fire. It's not that heavy-handed. We give you a show, but we have to give you a message at the end that makes it educational because we have to meet this criteria. It's no, teach with the story. Teach, you know, how to grow up, how to learn from things, how to grow emotionally, how to accept death, how to accept differences in people, that kind of stuff. Kid shows can do that, and the really good ones do it. I feel like this is a very high point for TV. And I've gone on and on about Gumball, which does not do anything quite like that. But again, the show is so smart and so fast that I think kids, when they watch it, probably only get one thing the first couple of times. And then as they get older or they get more experienced, they pick up on stuff later on, and it makes it worth watching again and again and again. And that's the best storytelling to me.
Yeah. No, yeah, yeah, exactly. So I believe that's just about going to wrap it up here for us. And hey, we're actually going under a time that I set for the Hangout. Hey, look at that. Woo. And you can find more about us by following us on Twitter at EltsNerds. And you can like our Facebook group at facebook.eltsnerds.com or facebook.com/eltsnerdsshows. And you can see a full archive of our episodes and other shows by visiting our YouTube channel at youtube.com/eltsnerdsshow or eltsnerds.com, which will probably get redirected here fairly soon to the webpage once I get it done. And we record this every Monday night at 9:30 p.m. Eastern, 6:30 p.m. Pacific time. And we have other shows out, like, that we are slacking on, to be completely blunt. Like,
Pod Save. If you want to know about the other shows, just check out eltsnerds.com.
Yes.
When they pop up, they will be part of the feeds. And if they don't pop up, well, you don't feel like you're missing anything. It's okay. This is good. Yeah. I like our relationship now. Why are you being so clingy?
But yeah, so all that being said, this has been a Don't Tell Glenn production. We'll see you guys later.
Thank you, everybody.